Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the Sunday Show on Fear for Monsters with Jack Jodell and Stephanie Johnson. I'm Stephanie Jerry. And tonight our guests are David Williams from Round37.com and Manny Jalonski, who is the managing editor and publisher of the PQ Brew in New York. Welcome, guys. I know we're waiting on David. No biggie. He'll show when he shows.
We've got to be more troublemakers.
Tonight, our topic is all around Jet Suite Charlie in Paris. Today was a big day in Paris. I don't think anybody could deny that. Over a million people were there. You know, Dennis Traynor Jr. opens Acronym Now TV, which is absolutely fabulous indie media, like Manny, Saturday Afternoon Post, Mine in Times, F. Wade Johnson. But Acronym TV, he opens it up and he says, "What do you stand for?" And over a million French people went into the streets of Paris today. And what I thought was really astounding, was jaw-dropping to me, was, first of all, there were people on camera, on live feed, that were saying, you know, "I'm a Muslim, but today I'm Jewish." And there were Jews who were saying, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew, but today I'm Muslim.
Solidarity.
Solidarity. And then over 40 prominent global leaders, including Angela Merkel, who stood between the president, the Palestinian president Abbas, and that gobshite from Israel, Netanyahu. I'm sorry, I'm not good with that one, but it was obviously a PR moment for him. All power to it, along with the Prime Minister of Spain and the Turkish President. People flew in for this event in Europe. And our country sent Eric Holder down there. He was in town. If you get the pictures of all of these guys, lock arms, marching in solidarity. It's really quite something to see. There are a lot of satellite issues attached to this whole event and what happened. But today the social media got the French people into the streets and brought global leadership in with them, which is
incredible.
What I think we've all been waiting to happen. You know, in many ways, wouldn't we have loved to have seen Obama with Occupy Wall Street? I mean, this is the goal. And that was what dropped my jaw. Okay, yeah, I am an idealist. It's true.
Well, but I don't blame you. And you know, President Hollande even got into it, France, and he said this event, what happened was an assault on humanity. It wasn't just limited to religion, to one religion or another. It's not pro or anti-religion. It's an assault on humanity and French values, is what he said.
Very good point. Here's the thing, and I'm going to cut a piece out of here from the New Yorker. The byline is by Teju Cole, and it's called "Unmournable Bodies." And if you haven't read it, it's really, I recommend it. I'll put a link in the chat room. But here's a paragraph. "More than a dozen people were killed by terrorists in Paris this week. The victims of these crimes are being mourned worldwide. They were human beings, beloved by their families and precious to their friends. On Wednesday, 12 of them were targeted by gunmen for their affiliation with the satirical French magazine Charlie Hebdo." And Charlie has often been aimed at Muslims. and its particular joy in flouting the Islamic ban on depictions of the Prophet Muhammad. It's done more than that, including taking on political targets as well as Jewish and Christian ones. The magazine depicted the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost in a sexual threesome. Well, we forget that. Illustrations such as these have been cited as evidence of Charlie Hebdo's willingness to offend everyone. But in recent years, the magazine has gone specifically for racist and Islamophobic provocation, and its numerous anti-Islam images have been inventively perverse, featuring hook-nosed Arabs, bullet-ridden Korans, variations on the theme of sodomy, and mockery of the victims of a massacre. It's not always easy to see the difference between certain witty dissent from religion and a bullying racist agenda, but it is necessary to try. And I'm going to stop right there with that. And that is one of the issues that is attached to this. And we also have with us today David, and I've already introduced you, David, but now you're on live. So, you know.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Good, David.
Hello, David.
Rock and roll.
Hey. You know, I just read a quote that might be, just to get some perspective. It's from the New York Observer, but it said, Mad Magazine is to Charlie Hebdo as Taylor Swift is to R. Crumb. That gives you the and that's the thing. There's nothing like it in America. So, you know, people have a hard time, you know, having an idea of what Charlie Hebdo is. It's, you know, it's one of the things the French like to do is make fun of people in power and institutions, and it's almost a national pastime.
It is, yeah. That's the truth.
And it's part of their what they've been doing for years and years and years. It just didn't start now. It just didn't start in the last few years. It just didn't start because of radical Islam factions. It's been going on for a very, very long time. It's just part of the way they
Hebdo
do the world and the way they do things. Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Charlie Hebdo started in 69. I mean, it's a bunch of older guys. You know, it's not a bunch of older cartoon types.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the point is that the French people came together today and they rebuked the extremism of violence.
Right.
At the same time, the question still stands about the political manipulative possibilities of events like this, and also the idea, too, that Hebdo has been, you know, decidedly racist with their cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
With Muslims. And free speech, I'm going to stand for it. I mean, I did read a piece today where it was comparative to the ACLU's defense of the Skokie events. Does anybody remember?
Right, with the Nazis marching.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Nazis marching
in
Skokie.
Yeah.
Illinois, right.
There's
the large Jewish population.
There is no question that we all abhor what Nazism stood for and what they were trying to do at the Skokie events by marching against Jews. But their ability to do so in our country and free speech was what you have to stand for.
To protect,
and
exactly.
I think the majority of French people today, especially the ones that were out there saying, you know, I'm Muslim, but today I'm a Jew, you know, and vice versa.
Honestly, like this is like wonderful to hear, but we should recognize there are layers of people who get to be canonized and get to be appreciated for being, you know, martyrs of free speech, and there are people who are terrorized for it, you know, in like Chelsea Manning, you know, and there's no huge 2 million people march and Angela Merkel arm in arm with Obama saying, you know, let her out. She was just trying to show us what we all paid for and are being held responsible about for the rest of the plan for. And there's sort of an interesting kind of point here, like how rare is it to find, an event that requires so much tragedy, an event with so much tragedy requiring the left and the center to sit quietly while the right rambles with almost like an insane blowback. This is like a Le Marie Pen moment right now, to put it that way. And the absurdity. And so, like, you know, much like the French, you know, I don't see the same thing that folks see in the American Nazi Party, but that's because I'm from Eastern Europe. They existed with the specific intent of killing us. You know what I mean? That was part of their constitution. Like, as a member of that group, they were a terrorist organization, and it's always been peculiar to me that situation where I see folks on the left defending them. But again, I'm of one mind of this, and admitting where I'm from Eastern Europe, where the Lebensraum was like basically perpetrated semi-successfully for 45 years. Just a butcher, and you almost hear nothing about it. You just hear about concentration camps. You know what I mean? So, like, the free speech thing, this should be, you know, when a whole bunch of media that's corporate, that's owned by like 6 or 7 major networks, is telling me, you know, this is wrong. The free speech is being denied. Freedom of the press is being denied. Are you kidding me? These are the fucking corporate networks. They don't give a flying fuck about free speech.
No, they just
want
to be watched. They want
about
to sell.
Free press.
You know, that's all they care about.
Absolutely. Like an execution on television, like a mother weeping at the grave of her son or her daughter.
Exploit it all.
This is to them, might as well be USC. This has no spiritual or emotional content to them outside of the advertising can sell. Now, inversely, I know our conversation is definitely going towards this, but it is amazing for what we're encouraged to not question the unity of, you know, like this moment. We do not question the unity of this moment. Really, Angela Merkel is an incredible Islamophobe, IMO, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, and she's got some nerve.
I agree.
You know, like, you know, as a matter of fact, France and Germany have some rather terroristic colonial policies towards Africa. Just what the French are doing in Mali right now, in reporting back on their own butcheries, ways that I'm sure are only mildly representative of what they're doing. Now, so, yes, this is a tragic free speech moment for perhaps, and my opinion on Charlie Hebdo is perhaps more textured by a different regional influence, but there's also like a moment for us that we should notice that, you know, the folks in Ferguson trying to protest, getting shot at by the cops, getting, tear gassed, having basically a fire, I forgot what those things were, like those freaking fire guns they're shooting at them, you know what I'm saying? Or the fire blazing into them.
Yeah.
That was not a free speech hero for Angela Merkel. That was not a free speech hero for Hollande. That was not a free speech hero for Obama. That was not a free speech hero for anybody on the right. There were criminals for people on the right. The people being shot on the street for trying to say, we want our goddamn human rights. No, those were the criminals. So there's a hypocrisy here that serves something. Now, like, absolutely, this is a tragic moment, but, like, it is precisely in those moments, and they're like, let's go kill this guy.
Well, you know, cynical politicians will always capitalize on something, and this is a good example of that.
Well, Gwynne, if you allow me to,
I'm just
curious
what everybody thinks, like, where do you, around the room, where do folks find, like, different colonial or international interests will take this strategy? Because some people use this as capital. I'm curious what the feeling of that is around the room.
David?
Well, I would like to read something, you know, as we're starting up this conversation, and it sort of follows along what Manny was saying. If you allow me a couple minutes here, I'll read it out.
Please.
Okay. For me, the issue is not the moral outrage, rightly justified, I might add, of the killing of those 12 in Paris. Nothing can possibly justify the cold-blooded killing of those cartoonists. But where is the outrage at other killings? There's been journalists killed in the Middle East. There's been countless journalists killed by drug lords in Mexico and other parts of South America. I think what creates these arguments I've been reading on social media, including some arguments surprisingly close to they got what they deserve, is the underlying anger towards selective moral outrage. You see it every day. This place gets bombed, and it's all the news for several days, but a NAACP building gets bombed, and you have to search several sites just to get to the mention of the building.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What the selective moral outrage tells people, not in words but by actions, is that some people's lives are worth more than others. You have the ideal world out there, but it's not for everyone, just a few, from birth to death. And if that death comes by murder, well, the pecking order still applies. A 12-year-old black boy gets shot dead in the streets and it barely makes the news, but kidnap a 12-year-old white girl and it's a nationwide Amber Alert.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's the perception that some lives are valued over others. Somehow that father's son in the Middle East doesn't equate to my son, that he doesn't have the right to be outraged, nor the voice to seek justice for innocent destroyed and his world murdered. That should be on equal footing as the Paris shooting. The Chari Hegbo shooting was a tragedy, absolutely, but carry the outrage to what is happening every day around the world.
Is there a teachable moment in here, guys, where, I mean, all of the people that came into the streets in France today, do you think that they see the distinctions and the axillary issues that we're talking about right now? Do you think it brings an awareness up for the greater social structure?
I would say they probably do better than most Americans do.
I mean, France certainly has their anti-Muslim.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a large percentage of the population.
Yeah,
well, so is Germany.
I'm going to say, if I could interject here, there was laws being proposed, and I don't think they passed, they might have, where Muslim women would be forbidden to wear their headscarves, the burqa face covering aspect, because people were threatened of, you know, a woman wanted to have, she didn't want to show her face for her driver's license. She wanted to be photographed with her burqa on, and they refused to do it. So, I mean, there's a lot of, how do I say this? Apprehension and distrust by somebody covering their face in that aspect.
Is this bring people actually into unity and solidarity that they walk away from today as a moment in their lives when they're given the opportunity to understand even more than just being against the extremism, that there was, you know, as Jack, you said, and Mike Stimson posted you for it in the room, in the end, kindness is what matters.
Yeah, very true, yeah.
Does this bring that kind of awareness out? Does that bridge some of the hate that is in the general population and bring the shutters away, the scales from the eyes? Manny, I would ask you that question because you look at people every day and reflect them when you're writing. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that this moment for the French will extend outward beyond, you know, just the moment?
Well, I mean, looking at even Hollande's past victory, he had to shift and he had to collect more allies from center and left and even right position because of the growth of the far right. Or Jean-Marie Le Pen, I think, was like, we've been predicting this. This is like the start of the stars, the big war of Islam. You know, so the teachable moment that is there, unfortunately, I think will be exploited by folks who have now developed long networks in Europe as much as here of publishing these stupid, hateful, billionaire-sponsored bigot-ass ideas. They are, for example, very big. There's a tremendous amount of violence, both economic, physical, and sort of cultural, to the Eastern Europeans that come and migrate and work there. Now, that has been the far right in France has been looking for ways to exploit that for just an incredibly long time. There's a lot of resentment about the job situation, and of course the right is, like in America, blaming the immigrants of the economies they trashed that are right next door. Like
right.
We blame folks from Mexico, even though NAFTA destroyed like 9 million agricultural jobs in a matter of like half a decade, I believe. And
right.
We have the same thing, you know, like the quote-unquote liberalization of the Eastern European countries meant just the huge orgy of theft. So as our folks migrate in to stay alive and get food, you know, and I'm from Eastern Europe to Western Europe, they find themselves in a position where they, even if they're there legally because of the EU zone, there is this long racist right that has been itching since, like, the Gaul and further back, you know.
Well,
from,
yeah.
And like
you look at the
Greece
colonies
France,
that France had in Africa and all the resultant terroristic acts that occurred in the early 60s when Algeria was clamoring for independence. They had a lot of strife, and this plays a part in it, too. You can bet on that.
Now, they're using this. What I'm saying is, like, for example, who went on the crazy offensive against Norwegians or Germans or Brits the last time a psychotic right-wing white person shot up a bunch of minorities?
Yeah, right. Well, like those kids, those teenagers that got killed in Norway,
you know what I mean?
A few years ago. That was a white
guy. Right-wing extremist.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So now there is no huge left, for example, publishing institution network, for example, that would last, I don't know, let's say proportionally 2-3 billion euros, right, compared to the right. But that's where
right.
I put the estimate right now. Well, why is an interesting question, but more importantly, what that produces is sort of like a narrative of what's happened here, you know? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to digress from the conversation. Basically, I don't think this is, I think this is going to be an exploitable moment, because as the economies have been imploited by the same sort of plundering that has happened here, the right-wing ratcheting of hatred and bigotry has been sort of picked up as well. And those folks looking for a scapegoat have finally found the perfect way. And we should all remember this as Americans from, like, September 13th. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they definitely will create linkage, I think. Yeah, the right-wing groups will say, look, you know, and then
they're itching
that
for
attack
boogeyman.
With all Muslims.
Yeah,
exactly.
They're itching for a boogeyman.
I was going to say, well, the thing is some that I have interacted with here in the Columbus, Ohio area, you know, you had liberals saying, you know, we all need to stand up and speak out against this. And then the conservative says, we need to, you know, get up and speak out against this. But their solution is basically very akin to getting out and rounding them up like the Japanese during World War II after bombing Pearl Harbor and putting them in a concentration camp so we can watch them.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that didn't work real well the first time. It's not going to work again. But that's, again, the extreme conservative
terrorism.
Voice here in Ohio is proposing.
Wow. Like, the tone to an Eastern European or anybody who even related who has heard legends of this in their own family, like, these are the tones they used to, like, I mean, before World War One, the Armenian camps.
The Armenians,
The various genocides all started like this. You see, there's Armenians secretly in Turkey. No, you see, there's Romanians secretly in so-and-so. No, you see, and it's always about territory and genocide and stealing their fucking resources, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, what's going to happen, IMO, like, exactly what you said. There's going to be a lot of kind of nut-batting dudes who will find the excuse right now to say the most absolute, absurd, stupid, hateful shit they've been waiting to say for a long time. I apologize for that.
I was going to say, I knew a man who was, this was 15 years ago now, who was 80 years old at the time. His mother was one of those, as a little girl, survived that genocide death march. He was an Armenian. Shahoyan was his last name. And the Turks marched him. Basically, as they were dying, you spread out the bodies all from Libya, what was now Iraq and the Turkey, that whole Turkish Empire.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know those stories well.
And the excuse was always, like when they did the Lebensraum, for example, it was really a real estate ploy. You know, it was really kind of just an expansion, capital, slaughtering people. But what they said in the meanwhile was like, well, these are actually German territories. And you Romanians and Slavs and Germans, whoever else is there, you guys are invading and you're a danger. You're a danger to the community. We can't even keep track of you. Let's put you in these little towns first by yourselves. And then from there, we'll execute your intelligentsia and then the rest of you. You know what I mean? Like,
So overall, Manny, you think that the right wing and the corporatists and or oligarchs and the rest of them, that this is just a manipulative moment, that they will manipulate this, and the greater message out there will be whatever they mold it to. I mean,
Absolutely.
My jaw dropped seeing those people out there today. I mean, the Prime Minister of Turkey then imprisons more journalists than any other country. And I'm using some research here. Netanyahu, who's forced to kill 7 journalists in Gaza last year. Secretary Shukri of Egypt was there, who's detained journalists and got him on trial. The foreign minister of Russia, which last year jailed a journalist for insulting a government servant. Foreign minister of Algeria, which has detained journalists for 15 months without charges. And the list goes on and on.
Let's not forget our own domestic government has been quite proficient in jailing journalists as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, whistleblowers, you name it, anything that produces some knowledge that they can say that is against
the current establishment. Very good point.
Yeah, the current establishment. I mean, there's people sitting in jail right now because, I'll give an example. What about the guy that leaked information that the CIA was torturing in Guantanamo? He's still in jail, but they released a report of the actual torture, and nobody's been arrested on that.
Right.
So what kind of message does that deliver? It delivers that the people that present the news are the evil ones, and the ones that are actually doing it are the ones
that... And
that
is so perverse, isn't it, when you think about it? That is so perverse.
Absolutely. So, you know, before we call other kettles black, I think we need to look at our own...
Our own backyard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like Dick Cheney was on Fox News when it came out that, yes, the United States had tortured people and the findings of the Senate. And, of course, he said, oh, this is all bull crap. And stuff. Of course, you know, it's his criminal, war crimes that they're bringing out and making confessions about. And then the Fox News person asked him, said, well, what about this passage here? And he said, oh, I haven't read the thing.
He's just out there trying to prevent himself being from renditioned to The Hague.
He's covering his own butt. This guy's a criminal. Mm-hmm. And this report said he's a criminal. But because it says he's a criminal, then it was full of crap. It was all made up and stuff like that. And then when he asked him a certain passage, I haven't read it. Okay.
We're still looking to...
That's a class A liar right there, huh?
He's a
corporate level liar. That man should have been president. Okay, that man made a horrible president.
Yeah.
Are we still looking to arrest Julian Assange? He's in Ecuador embassy. Mm-hmm. I mean, what about him? What about Snowden? I mean, is there anything that he...
Snowden? Yeah.
What about Barry Brown being basically entrapped? What about the NAMCHA project and things like Team Themis, where H.P. Gary corporations were specifically targeting independent, the smaller and the independent journalists, the more they'd be targeted to keep them off this, like, Chamber of Commerce crap they were doing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
These are, like, the corporations that were bringing the channels are so obscenely hypocritical, but it's almost impossible to notice it because of the obscene hypocrites that are marching, supposedly for free speech and freedom of the press.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put down their marching and everything, and certainly I would have outrage towards what happened in Paris. But the thing is it cannot be selective. They cannot have selective outrage look over here, someone's, murdering somebody else, but look over here, someone did it. Oh, we're just going to be outrageous about this event and completely ignore the other.
The commonality of this is always, it's done to America, it's terrorism. When America does it, it's justified. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
National
defense.
We've assassinated people by drones just because of what they put on their website.
Exactly.
Yep.
We call it aiding and abetting terrorism. You know, we have a formal name for it, but,
then there's the whole, like, it's exactly that. I mean, there's even being killed around somebody who has posted something you were not supposed to have posted, right? You have to prove you're innocent after you're dead to not be labeled a terrorist.
Yeah,
that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
Like that's, and that's actually why they have such a low, which will go collateral count. Everybody knows this, you know. But stunning. Like you can't even support the guy who's like, you know what I mean? Curacao, for example, I know is having trouble even getting letters out. Barrett Brown is having the same issues. You know, it's like the people who are even writing to the folks in prison are now having the trouble. You know what I mean? So you know, like I feel like this is, you know, it's always important to actually feel the deep human tragedy of what's happening here.
And, you know, it's always happening this way. We act like it's just happening now. In the days of Solzhenitsyn and Sakharov, you remember that some years back? At the same time, we were, that was just terrible. And what the Russians are doing to those guys and trying to silence them, they were dissidents. Mm-hmm. What about what they tried to do to Daniel Ellsberg? They tried to blackball him and make him look like he was insane. And, you know, he was a whistleblower and a very prominent one, and we treated him the same way. So nobody holds a white lily on this stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, I think I'm saying is that you cannot, I mean, sure, it's great to see everybody coming together in protest for what happened. But in the same thing, you know, always look at the other picture. You know, don't allow that to become just hypocrisy towards, you know, it's only journalists that get killed that are a problem, or it's only, you know, Europeans or Americans that get killed that's a problem.
Right,
It's violence everywhere. And
exactly.
You need to be more aware of that. I'd like to see that turn towards more general. Instead of I am Paris, maybe I am the world type thing.
Right.
So this is, David, this is a clarification moment where indie media can mirror the hypocrisy of how one segment of the press is handling this and the overall effect it has on the population, whereas the truth of the matter is vital and people should see that. It's indie media's opportunity to reflect that mirror back, yes?
Yes. There's really very few journalists, true journalists, left in the United States. I mean, it may sound a little harsh, but
no, it's very true.
There is
a lot of
journalists that are scared. They're running scared right now. There's a lot of blogsters out there that are running scared.
Yeah.
You know, it's either corporate pressure.
Folks, you know, some of us are on lists, right? I mean, let's be real. You know, like, I was on a couple of things, the NAMSHUB list. I was on a few other things. And, you know, the whole Jennifer Emig, the Breitbart. Yeah, no. There's tons of even small scale of us. Please go on, David. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it's not only political pressure, you know, or threats. It's corporate pressure. You know, you got
big time.
What, five media that are controlling most of the thing, and if you got an interview coming up, and they say, well, if you give us one harsh question, you'll never get to ask me another question again, or the corporate will say, well, you know, what the hell was that? You know, you're attacking this guy. We'll see you later. There's a lot of economic pressure on journalists.
Well, yes, there is, yeah.
Well, as you guys know, we've brought it up many times, the biggest ruin of news was when they commercialized it, and there was news for profit.
Infotainment.
And, of course, who's your sponsor? You know, the Monsanto, if you want to say your genetically modified foods, your asbestos, your Agent Orange aspects, you want to talk about that, well, now you're offending Monsanto, so henceforth they're going to pull their advertising dollars. That's their power.
Yeah,
it's not that you were lying about them, not telling them the truth, and informing the people, your citizenry of your country for free speech, but they can economically crush you by saying, we're not paying for this.
Yes, and that goes towards funding in universities and scientific research, too.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
Pervasive.
There's a lot of
society.
Pressure in that avenue that, okay, you know, you may have an important truth to get out there in a scientific method that's sound, but if you ain't get the funding, you're going nowhere, and they can make it where you're just out of career.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And it's sort of like the importance of economic democracy in the larger meta question we're always kind of talking about, right? Like,
it's economic enslavement.
Well, we don't have the economic and industrial power. The democracy, we sort of walk into kingdoms. Each one of us will do our jobs, or fiefdoms, or whatever they're called, you know, and we have very little sort of say over the resources or how they're going to be directed, or we have very, very, very little resources to actually, like,
you know, I think Lazarus has this, I think it's called dependency theory, and it kind of it shows how sort of the system has grown so big that we're all kind of forced to defend this terrible, terrible gluttony. And so even in easy reporting, which is like, you know, I think for a mainstream channel right now, it would be like, well, look at guys like Boris Johnson who are using this excuse to say, clamp down on everybody's rights, you know? Let's trap, you know, let's get every Muslim's phone calls and shit. Well, one of them, he actually said, I don't care about civil rights whatsoever, like civil liberties. This is like a few days after that. So, you know, there's kind of an excuse making about to happen. Yeah, I apologize. Again, I interrupted. I'm sorry.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with economic stratification. When you have, you know, 100 people that have, you know, 60 or 70% of the wealth in the United States, you know, back in the 60s and 50s, when there was respect for the, what they call the fourth branch, if someone had was angry about a certain opinion or something like that, it wasn't like they couldn't go to someplace else. There was diversity in the avenues of information.
Well, plus
and
we have
right
the fairness doctrine,
no diversity
which
at all.
Reagan put the kibosh on, you know.
Yeah. You guys make me think of this. You're talking about Reagan. There's a company that's in, I won't mention their name, but they're in the same office building that I'm in. And the management is just totally destroying it. Well, these are airplane pilots. They're unionized. And they have a big poster right in their hallway that you can see through the big glass doors. Says, the greed of management is ruining this company. But because they have a union and a voice, management can't squash that poster.
Right.
I thought that was quite interesting. Of course, when Reagan destroyed the unions, i.e. through air traffic controllers, and it just Christmas tree right on down, you know, I can't think of any other company that would allow the employees to be able to put up that no-printed poster stating the fact of the company. That's their voice. You lost the middle working middle class lost their voice when they destroyed the unions.
Yeah, it's very true.
You can do it, Mike.
If I can just sort of reject that, that's industrial power, like having economic forces in our hands. Like this radio show is a little bit of an economic and industrial power. It produces things, creates ideas, it gets out there. But I'm talking about much more materially productive things. And that's honestly why we're losing. You know, that's all. I think it was such a great example that he gave. Thank you. Please, Gwen, I didn't mean to.
No, from everything that it's saying, it's like this actual event and the kind of conversation that people who are aware of so much within politics and who are seeing with a greater clarity, it just, the hierarchy of the whole global situation falls out of this bag, just like marbles going across the sand here. It's, you know, it really goes to bear on everything in this moment, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it has a strong possibility of going from a tragedy to what is called a moment of opportunity, where you take that event and force an agenda or strengthen your agenda, you know, like the racist anti-Islamic factions. And you know, it's in a way, and it's also been brought up too, that perhaps that's what the terrorists are wanting. They want a increased wedge so that it drives the non-decisives that, you know, are thinking that they're getting the raw deal, drives them in more towards their camp too.
Do you think that was the public image that was part of this march though? The
No, I think they're genuinely protesting against a threat. You know, they're expressing support and protesting this threat against this tragedy. But you know, the thing is that what's going to happen in the weeks to come? Will that
sorrow turn into outrage? Right. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, corporations will be able to manipulate it for their own purposes, or, you know, just like our Patriot Act. You know, that was a few religious fanatics, and we gave away our illegal search and seizures, all of the basically many of our Bill of Rights that Jefferson wanted to make sure we had in our Constitution, we signed them all away at that moment.
Well, the writ of habeas corpus was suspended, you know. What's more grievous than that?
Yeah.
Well, I'd ask you, David, I'd ask you, as far as clarifying the moment goes, and getting the information out there to people, do you think the possibility is that the hypocrisy of all of this will roll out from it too on a larger scale?
Oh, that people will be more aware of the hypocrisy?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying? No, I don't think much will come of it towards that. I mean, if you're not aware of it to that moment, why would the killing of 12 people increase your awareness? You know, the whole thing is to get people more proactive in informing themselves. I mean, we're really terrible here in the United States. You know, we are spoon-fed our infomercial news, and it doesn't go beyond that for a majority of the people. You know, that's sort of the great thing about social media is that some of the people can be exposed to different avenues, and, you know, it gets to the point where they produce that moment of questioning in their mind, and once that occurs...
Well, that's the only place where you get investigative journalism anymore.
Exactly, yeah. It produces that spark of curiosity, and you know,
right.
They go further and say, hey, wait a second, maybe MSNBC or ABC or CBS, maybe they're not giving me the total picture.
And they're not.
Well, yeah, it's obvious to us, but, you know, there's a lot of people that think that Fox News is news, too, you know.
God help them.
I think that we're hitting on such a great point. There's like a perception gap between folks who sort of make a habit of keeping up with what's going on critically in the world, not in any like hyper-dramatic way, but just knowing how the world is interacting with itself between regions and places and economies and their neighborhoods, you know?
Yeah, right.
And
mm-hmm.
folks who are sort of news entertainment consumers or like folks cheer for the Yankees but may not know a single statistic or year. You know how folks like adamantly cheer for like a wrestler? That kind of political mind horrifically makes up, I mean... to give you, I would say at least a quarter of the population, which is by far enough to win an even a national election, to get a sense of it, 52% of Republicans, I believe it was, to this day, the city came out like last week, believe that Iraq had WMDs, and a quarter of all Americans overall believe it. So there's a huge difference between sort of this conversation here. And, man, the some of the guttural hatred that now gets to be fueled, you know? And I think we're going to, like, see that gap. I think somebody, we've been talking about this, an opportunity for the right. I think we'll also see an opportunity for the left, for the humanists, and for folks who want to see, like, a more global community that's more peaceful, where they'll be, we sort of recognized already the right coming out, and we're going to have to make those steps towards sort of stopping the crazy, the ginned up mob, the
knee jerk reaction.
The mob that, yep, exactly. The ones who have been pushed and pushed and nested for years, there's been all sorts of, I don't know, kindling built up for years, and aha, they have their spark. Now they can light this horrible fascist rage and speak and law and pretend it's all in the name of some poor martyrs who died. Man, that sounds familiar with a lot of goddamn genocides and murders and wars that started, you know?
Oh,
yeah. There's always going to be the lost souls out there, but it's the people that are straddling the fence or maybe, you know, through maybe intellectual laziness or haven't really informed themselves that you got to reach out to.
That plays a big part of it.
Yeah, there's plenty of dark souls out there, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
We've gone, I think you nailed it. I think like that battle for the... But the folks still sort of debating the issues is where it's going to be. I think you really nailed it there. The folks on the fence.
Wow.
I would sort of like, I'm kind of curious about the feeling around the room. Where do we see the opportunities to resist what will, in my opinion, if you see the stuff on Fox, quote unquote, news right now, don't watch it unless if you've eaten recently, because it's like ipecac for your soul, my man, my folks. It is really terrible, terrible, terrible stuff right now.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, and they're really absolutely ready. Apparently, Birmingham is an all-Muslim city, which, you know, the Brits were very surprised to find today. You know, the Fox News is on some crazy, crazy, crazy stuff, and the distance is going to be far. Now, so I'm curious what folks see as our opportunity, or what are some of our strategies to maybe, like, work with people that are on the fence, perhaps not the Fox News addict.
Well, you know, a lot of people are drawing away from network news because it's the same old generic bland bullshit, and it's all propaganda, and people are not that damn dumb. People can sense that they're not being fed what they need to know, and the ones that care, and there are a growing number of those, I believe, that they'll get their news any way they can. They get it by going onto the Internet and doing social media, researching things using Google and other search engines, and they want an answer. They're hungry for knowledge, like is normally like a normal human occupation is to be hungry for knowledge and to try to get to the bottom of things that you have questions upon. And a growing number of people are starting to do that, and I'm so glad that they are. And when it comes to the point where the corporate networks finally change, and God only knows when that'll be, but let's hope that it happens very soon because they're atrocious the way they are right today.
Well, I think they should be.
Yeah, I think there's a generation that starved for true information. I think that's why
Real
Jon
news.
Stewart did so well. You know, he wasn't exactly news, but I mean, he gave a somewhat different opinion than, you know, the garbage mainstream.
Yeah, it wasn't the same old lily white starched crap. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he had his faults, but, you know, he was a different selection, and I think that's why he was so popular.
Exactly.
I think that people are seeking knowledge. There's a big vacuum out there that needs to be filled, and the first person that can...
Big.
Yeah.
Just to put some numbers behind what you folks are saying, even in the Pew Research poll, comparing sort of the new online news watches versus the traditional not online news watches, like the sort of cable watchers,
right.
There's a serious difference in how much more pre-suspicion there is of, for example, there's going to be a bias. You know what I mean? About 81% of folks who are online news readers, as opposed to the previous generations. Now, and it's not an insult to previous generations. They try to create a lot of their media on their own. I'm just saying it wasn't as democratically available to them.
Mm-hmm.
But through this ability, 81% of the folks who are getting their news now online think most of the stories are BS or about stuff that has nothing to do with. So there's actually a changing attitude. Just to sort of throw some hopeful numbers behind you folks, these are trends even like in fairly mainstream outlets like Pew Research poll, they're seeing that the news consumer is not just more choosy, but specifically more of a protagonist in their news consumption. Now, I'm not saying that's always towards a more open perspective, but they do seem to be more protagonistic, more self-directed in their news consumption. Just to say that the numbers agree with you.
It's interesting to note, too, that most people, a lot of people, maybe not most, but a good share of our population just doesn't give a damn. They, you know what? Let's look at MSNBC as a network, for example. The biggest show on MSNBC isn't Morning Joe. It isn't The Ed Show. It isn't Rachel Maddow. You know what the biggest show on MSNBC in terms of viewership is? Lockout and Manhunt and all that bullshit they have after the news is off. I mean, it's pathetic.
Well, I mean,
yeah, it's a big struggle, that's for sure. You know, I forget what I read somewhere, but I think 25% of the population still think that the sun revolves around the Earth.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I saw that in the Pew Research poll. Yep, you're totally. Yep.
Isn't that pathetic?
Yeah, and that's 15th century. So we got 700 centuries of. I mean,
well, at least they know.
Years
at least they know you won't fall off
up.
The edge of the world when you go out to sea. At least
I can remember
that far.
I can remember as a kid. This is when John Glenn had just orbited the Earth, right?
Right.
And all that. Of course, you know, we watched the launch in school, you know, and because that was history being made, and we actually stopped the class, and they turned on the TV, and we watched it. Well, it was then later on, like a day or two later, the kid's father was very religious. One of my classmates, and we were all standing around talking about John Glenn orbiting the Earth. Well, the father slapped his head, son alongside the head and said, "Your Bible says the earth is flat. Don't you ever let me hear you say blasphemous statements that the earth is round."
Lord.
And the rest of us
serious?
Are standing there. I am serious. Our jaws were dropped.
Oh, like, yeah.
This guy just hit his kid because he made the fact and truthful statement that the earth was round, but because the Bible said, you know, God sent from the Tower of Babel, said God sent the people to all of the four corners of the earth. Well, you can't have four corners of the earth if the earth is round, so the earth must be flat. He slapped his kid. That's the kind of mentality.
And it's still out there.
Exactly. That's the thing I'm saying. It is still out there. I'm sure Sarah Palin wouldn't be too far from that statement.
Yeah, it reminds me of a story. I remember when my oldest son was working at a video game store, and this one parent came in. It was like the day after Christmas and something like that, and he was demanding to return this video game. And you know, you have to put down a reason. And he goes, "Well, what was your reason for bringing back the game, sir?" And he goes, "Because there's demons in it."
Wow.
So he would tease my son for like months. "There's demons in it."
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is not a linear story. We're not like barely out of the dredge and mire of stupidity. What's happening is we've tremendously gotten dumber. You know, we've gotten a lot dumber.
Dumbing down.
I call it.
I'm not putting this on the folks who have to. You know, we have 12, 14 hours back 100 years ago. Folks had to work a day, 6 days a week. You know, and even back then, they started the American Lyceum movement and the Golden Age of Free Thought. Folks try to self-educate, So folks have been trying to do this. But the actual the notion of sort of a pop information for consumption that is produced for profit, plus the absurdity of to create for-profit academic institutions that preach just profit, things like the Ayn Rand Institute, like the Macon Center, you know what I mean, and at the University of Florida. All these places that are basically just right. This has specifically brought us to the bottom of OECD rankings for simple shit like math, man. We were not always there, and it's not a matter of just the rest of the world catching up. It's a matter of who is getting tested. Well, it was always the folks who were in school. Fine. We have actually just gotten dumber and dumber and dumber,
and
not by accident.
It's been calculated.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But why? You know, like, it's sort of like you get folks to obey a more guttural, fed, carnal, physical, material reality, the one of them staying alive. And I think the one, the story you just told about the earth is not round, Ken. I'll slap the shit out of you if you ever say that again.
Yeah,
I think that's the perfect example of what's going on in America, where we sort of are pushing an almost schizophrenic way of being. Like, I have to not get punched in the mouth. I have to deny the reality I know and understand. So for my reality to continue, I have to deny portions of this reality that I know are true. This is like
not
a
only that, but, you know, Manny, there's an appalling lack of other countries and other values and other inputs in this country that Americans are being so blind these days, not all, but a good number of them are. The common media doesn't, it caters to the lowest common denominator.
And you're right, the media, though, that media is now making our history books. So what was the last time, who is old enough to remember a middle school or high school history book that was actually called history? Anybody? Because mine was called, like, Brave Frontiers. Freedom's
stuff.
Promise. Right?
And it's always America the best. There's never any discussion of different forms of government except that they're bad and we're the best. That's all the underlying motive on all of this stuff.
My school, I remember world history and American history. And I also remember, though, that my civics book was How the Government Works.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's not
the ones I got.
That's
I was like,
I went to a different school.
I had to get to college before I read an intelligent book on politics, and I'll never forget the name. It was so good. It was called Fascism, communism, and democracy, and it examined each form of government and the characteristics of each and the tenets that each held. It was fabulous, and it was something I learned that I never learned in high school or pre-high school. You know, it's just we're being fed such pap. It's just bullshit.
I would like to clarify for the moment here. We're going to run as long as the conversation does. The Blog Talk people would not let me make the rest of the show live. So anyone listening, if you just call in, you can hear the rest of the conversation.
And I urge everybody to keep pushing forward.
Absolutely.
I
think one of the most important history books that I read sort of awakened my eyes a little bit was Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States.
Oh, yes. Very good. Very good.
Very excellent book. And, you know, he didn't sugarcoat. You know, and that's the thing is how you improve things is you know, you don't just continually go over your glory. You go over what the flaws are. You know,
you go over the Japanese internment camps. It's all part of the picture.
You go over everything so you improve and use that knowledge to learn how to act in the future.
Required reading in every classroom in the country.
I would say you study history so you can see your pitfalls and hope that you don't repeat them again. You know, the old adage, those that never learned the history are doomed to repeat it.
What we're kind of talking about is an ideologue way of viewing backwards so that we can self-narrate how we want and pretend we are what we are, or a scientific material, like a basic reality-based kind of, how would you figure out how your car would work better? What's not working? What's working well? Let's do that better. You know, instead we do the opposite. We're like, what are the best gleanable things? And I think this is an excellent point that the group is making. Please.
Well, it's like engineering. I mean, how would you ever develop a product if no one was able to tell you what the problems were?
Right.
That were not to be spoken of.
And with my engineering background and in mechanical and electrical, you know, that's what you look at. It's like you have to debug.
That's the first thing you look at.
You've got to look at it and you debug it. Right.
That's right.
You make your first stab at it, but then you look at it logically and debug it when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to bring up was we just finished talking about how the Ottoman Turks, i.e. Turkey, marched the genocide aspects of the Armenians because they were the scapegoats at the time for the degrading of the Ottoman Empire. And, of course, you know, we can go, you know, the Jews in Nazi Germany, the scapegoat there. But let's look at the Cherokee nation here in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh, I live
there. Tears, right? You know, I learned about that in U.S. history, right? And we talked about it. But, you know, never was it ever put in the context of this was a genocide death march just like the Ottoman Turks did to the Armenians.
Exactly.
There was no difference. Let's
yeah, the
total tears
ended
guys.
At about 30 miles from where I live at here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know,
no, instead we get
just to
we
throw
get
a little bit of
competition
in that
of our accomplishments
argument.
And how good we are. And we don't never talk about how bad we have been.
Yeah.
I mean, like other countries saw our American genocide as a model. As a matter of fact, that's what the Lebensraum introduction included.
Exactly. That's what Nazi Germany justified their actions, saying, look at your own history.
Right.
I mean,
David,
even as a model,
the Jim Crow laws, right, the Jim Crow laws of this country to the laws that they passed to drive down the Jews and arrest them. They were the exact same laws of the Jim Crow. Of the
well, actually, during the Nuremberg war trials, they used our eugenics laws as part of their defense. Yeah, because they took our eugenics laws and just expanded it out.
Yeah.
Matter of fact,
Ford, just
made
America,
Ford,
you know, the right wing of like Rush Limbaugh. It's like, let's look at what we did, admit the fact, and damn sure make sure it doesn't happen again. That's the real aspect of reviewing our history, and that's what I say.
David,
but that's the true patriots. The true patriots are the ones that are trying to see. Okay, what are our faults? We accept them, but we're going to improve our country.
Hello?
You know, the people that blindly accept you know, flag waving and bumper stickers, they're not
they're morons
at all. They're morons.
No, they're idiots. They're idiots. Yep.
They're the worst kind of they're detrimental to the country.
Yes.
I think when a lot of folks, like, I don't even, I've always thought patriotism is an odd thing, it's just bizarre to me, but I think when a lot of folks see the great things in patriotism, I think they mean community, and I think what the right does in these moments is, like, they say, aha, community, and they say patriotism, maybe they'll get us to say patriotism, and then they'll say, let's go to war, let's go kick this minority's ass, and it's funny, because the same thing is, we equate in a nation or just even any collection of communities, right, whether it's our city or whatever, in a human, what we connect for a human purpose, they will then use for an inhuman purpose. Uh-oh.
It's okay.
I don't know what that is.
I'm just calling.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yeah, I'm trying to call Wayne back in.
Oh, I got knocked off. Every week, somebody gets the bump.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
good day. This is Wayne Johnson. Sorry I can't take your call right now. But if you leave a short message, I'll get back to you. Just
there we go.
You know, come on, guys. I got to get Manny back now.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
You're getting
everybody's dropping out. Is it Skype that does that, or what's causing that?
I think Block Talk Radio is doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Jeez.
We're being sabotaged.
You know what? I can't call back in. They have to call back in. And so David and Jack and
David
I.
and Jack are here. But Manny's gone, and so is Scott, or so is Wayne.
Wait.
Yeah.
I don't think they can call back in. I do apologize for
it happened. I think it was an excellent show.
It was very good.
To take part in it.
Yeah, very good. We're always glad to have you, David.
No, thank you. Thank you.
You bet, absolutely. You always provide a good insight and and a lot of good information. Good solid information.
Oh,
you bet. Thank you.
Want to formally always thank David and Roundtree 7, number 7,
yes.
.com for sponsoring this show, too.
All right.
You're
Roundtree 7.
Yeah, you're our commercial. Well, we're our commercial. There's some schizophrenia.
Speaking of schizophrenia, I really love that picture you put on the with my tin foil hat fedora. That's pretty dapper looking, huh?
I'll have to send that via email, the show cover to Jack.
Yeah.
So we can see
the
computer is down, but I can still retrieve email on another computer, so I'll just do that. Yeah, I got to get a new computer. I'm going to do that. That's my goal this week. I just had the four-year shit happen. You know, it always happens every four years.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like an election.
Well, I tell you what, it's amazing how cheap laptops have gotten, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, the price I would have spent 5 years ago would have been a couple of $1,000. Now you can get them for $250.
It's incredible, yeah. It's really
cool. It
down.
Is,
that's
yeah.
good. Yeah, so that'll be my journey this week is to get that taken care of because I've been limping to the library all the time. That's no way to live. It's crazy to have
no
to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway. Well, I'm going to take off, gang. It's been wonderful, always, Gwen. And great show. I look forward to next week and urge everybody that's still listening in the archive, just keep pushing forward. It's the only way to go.
There you
All right,
go.
Thanks, Jack.
Yep, thank you, David and Wayne and Manny, too. It was nice hearing Manny again. And Gwen, thank you again, as always, for the great show you've been presenting to the public here for so long now. It's great.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Thank you, gentlemen. I guess this Sunday. We'll get back to it next Sunday.
Next week. Okay.
Yeah.
Look forward to it. Bye-bye, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.